This is a Cyber You Need podcast, episode 83, What Women Want, We Remain Neutral.
In Glasgow, Scotland, and with me across a very big stretch of water is
Steven in Mexico City. I want to first start off by saying sorry about the audio fuck up on episode 82. That was mostly my fault for not configuring my computer correctly, but fortunately somehow I was able to get the recording from Walton's side that was probably bad, so I don't know if you guys could actually understand me. But this week, hopefully, it's a hell of a lot better. As this time,
yeah. Did anyone listen though?
I think we had like negative 4 listeners. I think they rejected
it. It's all right. So like 4 people unlistened.
Yeah. But yeah. So I did the best I could to fix that one, and I think I put an apology at the beginning, if I recall correctly. But it was a bit of a challenge, and it. But it's out. We're back. That's the key thing is we're back. And now we're going to go back to our normally organized, structured discussions of what we do, which is boring shit, I guess.
So back to revolutionary discipline, comrade.
Yes, there we go, comrade. Or compa. It's been a bit of a crazy week. And 2 weeks now that we're kind of doing a 2-week cycle right now, which is going pretty well. It gives us better content to create. If anybody has not noticed, and if you're listening to this, I could only imagine you'd have to have noticed, but there's been a bit of a redesign to the site. I got concerned because, if you recall, God, near a year and a half ago, was it, or almost 2 years ago, that we had gotten attacked, and it was because of an exploit in a theme, that I decided that since our theme that we had purchased was no longer being developed, we got rid of it. And I replaced it with the new default theme of WordPress, which actually looks really nice, I have to say. So I was pretty psyched about that. But played around with it a lot and changed some links in there too. And because some of our links were actually dead, and I realized that we had not been tending to it as we should have. We're on video for all you guys listening in and gals, and Walton's drinking beer. What kind of beer is that, by the way?
It's called Cascadian East, and it's by Stuart Brewing, which I believe is in Edinburgh. But its style is American Pale Ale, so it tastes like Sierra Nevada or something like that. It's really good. I'm sorry if I'm distracting you with my looks of deep satisfaction as I drink my beer and listen to you rattle on about.
I needed you to talk so I could drink my
coffee. You know the old song. okay. You know the old revolutionary song that goes, as soon as this pub closes, we'll man the barricades.
I don't know.
As soon as this beer is finished, I'll pay attention to the podcast.
Oh, great. That's good to hear. I do have to say that I'm deeply looking forward to the beer selections when I get there. I'm actually looking forward to the beer selections when I go to Chicago next month.
There won't be any beer selections. I'll have drunk them all by then.
Oh, shit. Well, hold some for me, will you? At least hold the whiskey.
All right.
Well, anyhow, back to our wonderful redesign. While I used Walton's drinking of beer to let myself drink coffee, since it's much earlier here. One of the things that I added, or that we added to the links, was a resource section for labor unions and movements, which is really kind of detailing some of the software that we've explored with some of the examples, which we have another section called Software Libre Alpha, which is just a listing of sample sites or examples that we've put together. And the one thing I forgot to put on there? Well, no, the link is on there anyhow, the organizing network. A lot has been done on the site. Hope you guys and gals all enjoy it. It's nice to kind of have something fresh again. That's what I've been boringly up to in the last week, minus the stuff I have to talk about later, which I'll hold until later. What have you been up to yourself, Walton, besides drinking beer?
Well, this is all kind of unrelated to cyber unions, but the weather has improved. Which is actually quite significant because we've had 6 months of sort of constant rain.
Ah.
And suddenly, like, the sun is out and it's not warm, but the sun is out and I'm back cycling and it actually feels like spring might be coming. So everyone's feeling a bit positive and there's a spring in the step. And yeah, it's all good. So I'm as busy as always doing lots of work, particularly on our social media course, which we're doing at USI. But it just feels a lot more fun when the sun shines.
I hear you. And in fact, I don't understand why you say it's so different. My only experience of going to Scotland, it was sunny the entire time I was there, except we went to the Isle of Skye. So
I totally don't mind the cold, but this year we didn't have a cold winter. We had a wet one. It was just like 6 months of constant drizzle and rain.
My comrades in the Northeast, in Boston and in New York, might have an issue with it because they've been having snow tremendously this year. So much so that I've been dying to get back there and want to go back into that snowy abyss because I miss it.
I guess it's global warming, isn't it? Because like the weather patterns have been crazy everywhere because there's this really, really incredible snow in North America. There's been flooding in the UK, like absolutely unprecedented levels of flooding. And then in Australia, like record temperatures and bushfires. So yeah, there's all sorts of really weird stuff going on.
It certainly is. Although this crazy weather, I'm not sure I understand completely. Usually here, it's about 22 every day. So I can't really complain too much. Except that when it's in the sun, when I go biking in the sun, it gets fucking hot. It's just like the shade and sun differences are so different. How has the organizing network actually been going that you've been playing with so much?
Well, that's really cool. So we did speak about this last time, right? How our organizing network is built on Elg with Lorea plugins. And the thing that makes it cool is that it is really good for facilitating online accountable decision making, which means that you can form a group online and within that group you can make a proposal and people can vote on that proposal and they can make comments. And yes, you can have an open and accessible and transparent mechanism for making decisions. You can have assemblies, which are meetings, which you can have agendas and minutes and decisions and all that kind of thing. And the other thing, which is pretty cool, is this whole tasks thing, which has been developed. And the way that is, if you have a group, an activist group that's trying to do something, and there's maybe a bunch of things that you need to do. For example, like you need to photocopy some flyers and you need to contact certain people. There's a whole bunch of things that the group needs to do. You can set all of those as tasks and then people can click on the tasks tab, see what needs to be done, volunteer to do them. And as a group, you can keep a view of what's happening, of what's being done. And, I think this is a really cool tech tool for organizing. The thing is, like, I'm not quite as bad as you, but I'm tended in the same direction where I like technology. So I see something like this and go, oh, this is really cool. And I wanted to be there just because it's cool. Uh-huh. But actually trying to get activists to use it is something else entirely because, people are on so many networks already. And with everything that you use is always a learning curve and all that kind of thing. So it can sometimes be difficult to encourage people to get involved. And obviously with the organizing network, we very much don't want to send a message that this is the left-wing alternative to Facebook or this is the union Facebook, anything like that. It's not supposed to be that at all. It's just a space for people who need to organize a group online and be able to take decisions. But the cool thing is that people have actually been joining. There's a fair bit of activity there. And there's enough. And like, it's really made me think quite a lot about the value of social networks because if you read anything about social networks or if you think about social networks, the message that usually comes across is that the value of a social network is defined by the number of people on it. Mm-hmm. Like Facebook is massively valuable because there are so many people on Facebook and everyone you know and like, and even the people you don't like all on Facebook.
Yes.
And this has caused me to rethink that because there are only like 50 something people on the organizing network now, but that will grow. And the value of the network is not in its size, but in what it can do and the organizing function that it can have for the groups that get involved in it. And it's just really interesting to realize that, because I think that a few years ago, when Facebook was really reaching its prominence, there was a lot of debate around Facebook and kind of the idea that everyone had to put all their eggs in one basket. So obviously people had concerns with Facebook, and so there were attempts to create alternatives, and Diaspora is the one that everyone knows the most about. But there was almost a sense of like, we have to create something that's better than Facebook, that, you know, all the cool people will leave Facebook and come here or something like that. And it's interesting to realize you don't need to do that at all. There's plenty of room for something which is really small, really niche, but meets the needs of the people involved. Mm-hmm. And so I'm quite excited with the organizing network, and you know, we're not pushing it. We're quite keen to see it grow organically, and if, you know, it never gets more than a few hundred users, that's fine, because as long as it's useful, there's people who used it.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I remember Union Book, and I think there is a very drastic distinction between what we're trying to do and what they were trying to do, because Union Book did try to fill this void of, oh, it's like it's a union Facebook, but that's not, I mean, I feel at least with the Lorea plugins on Elg that it really makes it a decision location and ways to organize things that literally are much harder to think and conceptualize on the internet about, like, how do you do a voting structure? How do you set up when the meeting is going to be and what the agenda is going to be? And I feel like that's what this has done. And I know I'm a big supporter of it because I've been doing installs for this for a number of different organizations for internal communication means. But it really, in one sense of the term, becomes the replacement for email in a lot of ways, because it becomes a place where you have those private email discussions with people that are of like minds and working on actual taking actions and stuff like that. Whereas Union Book, I just felt, I don't know, it never clicked with me. It wasn't developed on something that was, I don't think it was open source or free and open source software.
It's Ning.
Ning, which I can't remember their license at this point, but I don't recall it being free and open. Mm-hmm. And in this case, it's something.
Yeah, in fact, I mean, Union Book, I know a bit of the history, and Union Book was originally built on Elg, but that was like 4 or 5 years ago when Elg actually was not that user friendly. There was a decision taken to move it to Ning because of Ning being easier to use, and you know, people were having trouble signing up and so on. I see Elg has actually developed into, seems like quite a robust platform now.
Yeah. It does, and a lot of the Lorea developers are working with the Elg developers on it too. So it's like especially we're only using the 1.8 version. The 1.9 version is is in beta, or not even in beta right now, but I've tested it out. It looks really nice. It's much sharper. But what we're using that makes organizing network look really good is that it's using this theme called Hype Styler that actually gives a lot of flexibility and gives it a really robust interface that makes it pretty easy to figure out. And that's the one thing I've found with this setup of it, is that it's pretty easy for people to figure out how to use things and how to get involved.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of cool in that. And you know, the cool thing is, in the future, the plan is for Elg to be federated in the 1.9 version. So if you remember back to the days of Statusnet and Identica, it'd be going back to those roots, which I think are really important to make sure that it can be federated with those other communities out there. So, and you can also keep them private. And I think that's also good for specific organizations and groups to keep them completely private, and all like that. So, and that's in interest of protecting people's identities and things like that if they're involved in oppressive nations, which I feel like we're going back to our first episode when we were talking about was it like SMS messages and protecting that within internal organizing within the UN. Wow, that's a total flashback. But anyhow, but it sounds good. I feel like we're gonna start jumping into tech before we even know it.
We kind of did, didn't we?
We did, but I do want to highlight one thing that I think it was written after our last episode, which is this really good article that you had written on using Elg and Lorea specifically, which I'll put a link in the show notes for people, and quite nicely named, Every Social Network Has an Ideology. So I definitely encourage everybody to read that, and why don't we jump into tech?
Which for you is computers.
So tech, wow, where do we go? I know there's been a lot of stuff we've done on the site, but there's some stuff that's movement related that I want to bring up because part of it is our collective membership of May 1st is working on this. I think we've touched on net neutrality in the past because it's been a topic that has ebbed and flowed over the years. And in the US, it's back to ebbing, I guess. There was a court decision that basically stripped the net neutrality rules out of the FCC regulations that they were utilizing to enforce some kind of net neutrality. And the cases were brought forward by the wonderful culprits of Comcast and Verizon, as well as a number of other ISPs out there, although they're all becoming one nowadays because I think Comcast is buying up everything and God, Verizon's doing the same. Net neutrality, if you have not been informed on this idea, I like actually using cable TV as the best example for it. I'm not sure if this relates across the border, or across the lake. But so
The lock, the
the
lock.
lock, with cable television, you pay for, like, if you want HBO, you have to pay for that package to have HBO. But you get like a basic cable system, and like the Daily Show and the Colbert Report in the US are on basic cable, so you don't have to pay extra to get those channels. They have a similar thing like that in the UK and Scotland.
I guess they probably do. I'm not, television isn't a very high priority in my life, so I couldn't
It's
tell you exactly how it works, but I think it's along those lines, yeah. Like
yes, or satellite
there's
TV would be similar.
Kunsttelly and yeah.
Yeah, so the similar concept is trying to be developed with net neutrality. The ISPs, which are the same providers of the cable networks in the US, want to be able to restrict certain sites to a package deal that you have to buy for that internet access. Netflix is actually one that signed in a recent agreement with Comcast on that specifically, which really fucking pissed off a lot of people because it further tries to kill net neutrality. It says that because Netflix has this deal that they get when you go to their website. You get faster internet connection than you do to if you go to your local union's website. And that's part of the idea is they want to restrict access to certain things. And it could eventually become, theoretically speaking, that the social movement websites would have to pay to be able to get the access that people want. And it basically restricts the internet. So this is a really big issue, an issue that the May 1st Leadership Committee is working on. But the thing that's really, really challenging is that with local communities and poor communities, there's traction for this. With labor unions, there's very little traction, at least in the U.S. context of the situation, because the CWA, the Communication Workers of America, and the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, which are the two unions that work that mostly are represented within the employment of Comcast and Verizon, have not really taken a stance on this. It's actually really discouraging in a lot of ways because when talked about it in small discussions, these unions are concerned about their contract when it comes to negotiating that if they start campaigning against net neutrality, they feel like they're going to be paying for it in their contract, which in their contract negotiations, which has been hard enough as it is because the CWA has been losing with Verizon. Verizon landlines, they're fine. They're still recognized. Verizon Wireless, they're not recognized. Verizon has said they, under U.S. labor law, that they are a different workforce, so therefore they don't have to, they're not held to having to make sure that they're unionized workers. If the workers want to organize, they have to go and organize like it's a brand new shop. And that's the unfortunate part because it's been a battle. And Verizon's winning that battle tremendously by giving them promotions and all these other shit programs and everything else with their workers to prevent them from ever wanting to organize a union. Comcast, on the other hand, is mostly the folks that are laying the lines. And they have had a lot of success in organizing the last number of years, especially in the Northeast, in Massachusetts and New York specifically, where they've gotten a lot. But the thing is, both these unions and are really, really hesitant to say anything. I've been in discussions with a couple of community groups, one called Media Mobilizing Project out of Philadelphia, and they've actually made inroads with a couple of labor unions coming from a community mobilizing aspect more so than from a labor-specific aspect. So it's really good in that sense because it's an issue that needs to be talked in labor, and not just amongst the CWA and the IBEW, but amongst all labor unions, because it's going to be affecting them in one form or another. The problem, in my opinion, is that labor unions don't use the internet. I don't know if you think that's accurate.
Pretty much, yeah.
It seems still, I mean, God, I think there was like some celebration of the 25th anniversary of the internet as we know it is coming up. And still to this day, labor unions still do not utilize the internet as an organizing front. And I think it still bothers the fuck out of me. And net neutrality is such an issue that is going to be especially impacting poor communities that it should be something that should be in the forefront of labor in the first place. But again, that goes back to all these other things of how labor organizes. But sorry, I'm rambling and I need a cup of coffee. I don't know.
Is there something
like this going on in the UK too?
I don't think people are aware of it to the same extent. It definitely is. And you're quite right. Like, I mean, this is kind of why cyber unions exists, because we really are disturbed by the fact that the union movement is just not really engaging with the internet and with technology. They have begun to learn that you can use social media for campaigning, so they, you know, they do use Facebook and Twitter and things like that a bit, but no one, I don't think, really in the labor movement understands the politics of technology and where the class lines run through technology and where social struggle happens in the world of technology, and for example why things like free software are important and that kind of stuff. Like the politics of what happens on the internet is completely over the heads of a lot of people in the labor movement. And that's really unfortunate because it's very important. We know how much more important information technology is going to become over the next few years. And if unions are blind to that, that means just another thing that they've missed, because unions largely missed the shift away from manufacturing into the service sector. And they weren't prepared to organize that sector, with the result that as manufacturing jobs were lost, unions weren't prepared to go organize in the new sector. And so unions declined in strength and power. And only now, like almost a generation later, are they beginning to get their act together and start organizing in the service sector and in retail and fast food and all that kind of thing. It's the same issue really with technology. Like by not understanding the importance of technological development and the central role that technology is going to play in the way society understands itself and organizes itself in the future, they're going to be on the back foot again. And it's going to be, you know, like years and years and years before they start to actually engage with the really important technological issues. And by the time that happens, a lot of the things will already have become facts on the ground, and it'll be a rear guard action to try and change something which has become established, rather than to be part of shaping the debate of what the internet is for.
Yeah.
And, you know, like we need to affirm the fact that the internet is a global commons. It's a resource for people. Its primary focus is not surveillance and control or profit making. Obviously, you know, there are two different groups of people who overlap, who want the internet to be that. They want it to be for profit, or they want it to be surveillance, or they want it to be both. Mm-hmm. And we really need to understand and develop the idea of the internet as pretty much one of the most amazing things that has ever been invented. It is the collective consciousness of humanity. It is, you know, gives us an ability to communicate in a way that we've never been able to before. Mm-hmm. And it is ridiculous that we sit back and allow corporations and governments to take control of it and think, you know, oh, that's great because I'll be entertained more easily. You know, they'll, like, my Netflix will come on fiber optic broadband or whatever the case might be. And to be turned into consumers of the internet is really depressing because of the potential of the internet and everything that it opens up for us to understand each other better as human beings and make new kinds of connections that we've never made before, to just be reduced to consumers again and to lose all control of it. This amazing outbreaking of digital democracy, to lose that would be a really terrible pity, and it would be real negligence on our part, I think.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I mean, this is open for discussion too, because I want to encourage people to even come to the organizing network, and because we have a group for cyber unions on there to talk about this stuff. But because I'm going to the Labor Notes conference at the beginning of April in Chicago, and I'm going there as a member of the leadership committee from May 1st, and we're trying to figure out even how to start the discussion with labor unions on the importance of net neutrality. I think net neutrality is actually one of the discussions that is not insanely tech savvy, tech specific, that I think it speaks to a larger volume, and I think it has an opportunity for us. So like, that's what I want to try to do, is encourage people to share thoughts with us on how we can approach this, because I don't have the answers. And following this podcast recording with you right now, I'm going to be on another call with some of the people I'm working with on this issue. But we've only met once, and we're meeting a couple like every week between now and the beginning of April to discuss this. And it seems to be a challenge. It seems to be a very big challenge of trying to bridge it. And it's something that I'm hoping we can do, because I think it's a really important thing for us to be facing. So, I think we've talked enough about labor at this point, Walton, that we might as well just jump into labor. What do you think?
Well, yes.
You know, the pay's not great, but the work is hard. Are you up for it?
Sorry, I'm still. These aren't even the interludes and segues that are coming because you want them, because they're from shows that stem from your side of the pond. But I'm just such a big fan of Black Books that I love that line.
I know, that was brilliant. I need to watch the whole series again. I think, next winter, I think that's what I'll do, is just watch the whole thing again.
Yeah. So, well, labor.
Crucially.
Crucially,
International Women's Day fell between two cyber unions podcasts, didn't it?
Yes, it did.
We didn't talk about it last time because it hadn't happened yet. And now it's already happened. When was it? On Saturday. And now it's Thursday already. So it's kind of in the past. And once again, it's like a total fail on our part, because we've got like two dudes talking about Women's Day, because we were totally disorganized. And we didn't arrange to do anything in particular for it.
No, we didn't. But I'm going to first say
that Happy Women's Day.
Yes, exactly. There is a good article on Labor Notes that I'll put in the link in the show notes that does discuss some of the challenges that we're still facing, because obviously we haven't gotten past it. One of the things that scares me the most is I actually didn't know this until I saw an SNL skit on it. There are people that are fighting for men's rights. That are trying to advocate.
Yeah, I've come across MRAs. Yeah,
I never heard of this shit before, which is fucking horrible. And I thought it was just a joke. I'm like, no, there's no way that's possible. Like, how could you make that? What fucking idiot? And then I think about all the fascists that we have in this world and realize that it's probably very likely. goddamn fucking fascists. And sexists and
all you fascist bouncers.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so I mean, the article I think is good. It doesn't do it justice, of course, of our mishap on not covering it last time, but it's certainly lots of work that we need to do, globally, domestically, locally, and everything. It's mind-boggling. A friend of mine was sharing a story with me here that a friend posted in Mexico. People holding up signs of friends of theirs saying that we don't need feminism. Females holding up signs that we don't need feminism. Feminism is important to us. Mexico is a very male-dominated society. I mean, the U.S. is very male-dominated, but here it's, I think, a little bit worse. And it's just horrible to even see people holding signs like that up to begin with. But in the workplaces of all here, it's not. There's no equality to it in the U.S. in the global North, so to speak. There's no equality to it, and we are failing on it, and need to do so much more fucking work. Sorry.
And also, you know, it comes down to also, if we want to make the world a better place, we really need to engage women, because women make up half the world, and women, you know, like our political movements at the moment are not quite moribund, but they're not good enough. Like they're not doing enough to challenge neoliberalism, to challenge the status quo. And we really, really need more activists, more people involved, and we need to open up and get more involved. And I think one of our biggest failures is the fact that we don't engage enough women, and that's because we are still too deaf to issues which are really important to women.
Yeah. Not only that, much like in the political landscape of governments, women still make up probably the majority. In the U.S., I know that the majority of people in the United States are women, and the political mm-hmm. systems do not reflect that once not at all. Mm-hmm. Like, most of them are male-dominated. The same within labor unions. Mm-hmm. Labor unions mm-hmm. still are male-dominated, and they're not in some cases, the women are being promoted and things like that, but it's not a matter of promotion. It's a matter of recognition. And I don't think the recognition is the same. Men still get recognized more deeply than women do. And I think it's still the signs of sexism in the labor movements and the social movements. I mean, it's a big freaking challenge.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so.
So, yeah, well, here's to another year of struggling to make that gap slightly smaller.
Yes. So, and not to go from missed news to sad news, but there is sad news that we have. But sad mm-hmm. and inspiring, I say, at the same time, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Which
is... Yeah, and that is the news that Bob Crowe, the General Secretary of the Rail, Maritime and Transport Union in the UK, has died very unexpectedly at the age of 52. There's no indication that he was suffering from ill health or anything like that. But he very, very unexpectedly died a couple of days ago, and it was a real surprise and a real shock to everyone. And Bob Crowe is very, very interesting in terms of the role he plays in British society. So this is really for listeners who are not British. He is the right-wing media's favorite bogeyman. Like, he represents everything that they hate. He is, like, to them, he is an unreconstructed communist from the past come to destroy the economy. And in a sense, they're right about that, because he is an unreconstructed communist from the past. You know, Bob Crowe's background is the Communist Party. He's a proper old-school, old-fashioned trade unionist who has never got with the new way of doing things, which is, you know, all about sort of partnership and all that kind of crap, which a lot of unions bought into when they suffered so badly in the 1980s under Thatcher and Reagan. Bob Crowe just never bought into that, and he stuck to the really old-fashioned idea that unions should be fighting for their members and that it's a class war. And the thing about Bob Crowe is, like, he was in many instances considered public enemy number one. And he was always portrayed as this outrageous militant and all that kind of thing. And it's true that he was militant, but one of the most interesting things about him is that he was actually a tactician and a class war strategist. So he wasn't just like I'm a trade unionist, I'm going to make a big noise and, you know, cause chaos type of thing. He was actually very, very good at understanding the levers of power and how they work. And the amazing thing about Bob Crowe is that his union, who are sort of seafarers and railway workers generally, are among the few blue-collar workers left in the UK who get good salaries. So train drivers on the London Underground get really, really good salaries. They're kind of more than, say, university academics get, for example.
Really?
And this really outrages people. You know, people are like, oh, dear, like, working class people get paid properly. And, you know, it's amazing that Bob Crowe is prepared to stand up for them and say, these people are doing an important job. Why the hell should working class people not get paid properly for doing an important job? Totally unapologetic about that. And also understanding that the, you know, Transport for London can afford it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when he took on a struggle, he knew he could win. So he didn't, you know, he didn't go for sort of, aesthetic militants, you know, like, let's be militant because it makes us look good, but have glorious defeats, which is something the left does quite a lot. He actually was enough of a strategist and a tactician to understand the power and to understand the money involved and to actually embark on industrial action and organizing that he knew could win. Mm-hmm. And the significance of this, or the result of this, was that he took his union, the RMT, from a membership of 60,000 people when he became general secretary about 10 years ago, to 80,000 people, which is actually quite a big jump in membership. It's still a small union, but across the Western world, a lot of unions are losing members. The RMT was putting on members rapidly because people know that the RMT stands up for them. Nice. And also, Bob Crowe, crucially, is not only representing the skilled workers, but he's fighting really hard, not just for the tube drivers, but for the people who clean the stations, you know, for the outsourced companies and all that kind of thing, and making really, really strong arguments about why working class people deserve to be paid properly. And that is so important, because I'm not sure what the political discourse is where you are, but what's become quite dominant in the UK is this idea. This has almost become the norm. It's become accepted wisdom that people who work for a living, blue-collar workers, working-class people, are supposed to be poor. Mm-hmm. And what they're supposed to do is aspire to, at the very least, become white-collar workers and ideally middle-class. So it's this idea of creating an aspirational culture. So if you work with your hands, if you do any kind of manual work, then you're supposed to be poor. But hopefully you can, I don't know, send your kids to university, whatever the case is, and they might become middle class. They might go and get some white collar job and be better off. And Bob Crowe defended the idea that if you work for a living and you do a decent job, you do a job that's valuable to society, you should be paid decently for that. And for goodness sake, like, the people who drive the London Underground trains are a lot more useful to society than a very, very high proportion of the people in London who are earning massive salaries. Mm-hmm. Because 3 million people use the London Underground every day. And it's actually not very many people who are ensuring their safety, ensuring that the trains run. And it's a really, really important role. And it was amazing for me to see the spanner that Bob Crowe could put in the works of global finance capital. Mm-hmm. And this is the thing, like, the City of London, in a sense, is the spiritual home of global capital. It's like the Vatican for capitalism. It's like, you know, it is this massive money laundering operation where dirty money comes in from Eastern Europe and from drug dealers in Mexico and from all over the world, is siphoned through London and disappears out to tax havens. And it's this ridiculous bubble economy that London has. And it really is this kind of hyper financial capitalism, which has no relation to the real world. It's you know, capitalism on steroids. It's absolutely the worst elements of the system. It's the stuff that caused it to crash. Mm-hmm. And the fact that Bob Crowe and his members could bring that whole system to a halt was fantastic.
Yeah,
you know, ordinary working class guys be like, oh, by the way, tube strike, you know?
Yeah.
One of the most powerful, important cities in the world. Sorry, none of you fuckers are getting to work. and that was fantastic. And like, the image that occurred to me was like the Spartan warriors in the Battle of Thermopylae, like holding that pass, like the sort of, you know, 300 Spartan warriors. It's like the small band of brothers and sisters who are able to put a spoke in the works of this massive kind of machine of capitalist accumulation. And the thing is, like, because of the way the RMT was putting on members and because of the way this was effective, it changed union culture in the UK, like, for a long time, from sort of the defeat of the miners, 1984, 1985, up until maybe 3-4 years ago, the culture of unions in the UK has been conciliatory, and it's been based on servicing. It's been unions effectively have tried partnership deals, and I've been in negotiations with union activists, and management has said, you know, it's all very well having a union as long as they don't challenge management's right to manage. Mm-hmm. And obviously by that they mean be autocratic.
Yeah.
And the unions have gone, no, of course we wouldn't do that. You know, all we want is to make sure that you're complete total dominance is, fair.
Hmm.
But the thing is, like, Bob Crow showed that there's not only an appetite for fighting back. When you fight back, you start to win, yeah. And you change things. And like that actually started to shift the union culture in the UK. And the result of that was that a number of unions started to shift to the left. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, there's always contested politics in unions, and unions have a left and a right. But Bob Crow emboldened the left-wing forces in a lot of trade unions. Fire Brigades Union is another left-wing union. The PCS, which is the Public and Commercial Services Union, is a public sector union, took a major shift to the left. They've got like a left-wing general secretary, Mark Sobotka, who is fantastic, dynamic, you know, sort of wonderful. Len McCluskey and Unite. Unite is the biggest union in the UK. It's got 1.5 million members. It was a sort of highly, it was a really important leadership contest that happened in there. Len McCluskey massively won the vote, and the person who came second was also a left-wing activist. And so now you have, like, by far the balance of power in the union movement in the UK has shifted not just to the left, but towards democracy, towards you know, giving ordinary members a say and allowing ordinary activists to take more control of campaigns, and also towards fighting back, to using civil disobedience if necessary, to, you know, to challenge anti-union laws, and to realize that there is actually union power in the shop floor, which is a real contrast to where the unions were a few years ago, where they thought like the only power they have is maybe being friends with a Labour politician who might change things for them. And Bob Crow, real inspiration. And sadly missed, but I think that he has really helped to clarify the importance of trade unions and the kind of trade unionism that we need.
Yeah, no, it sounds like it. I mean, it sounds really inspirational, the life he lived and the work he was a part of. And it's never a nice day when somebody passes like that, and it's unfortunate. But we have to rebuild, and we have to continue the building what they were working on. And that's the hardest part, is whenever that happens, it's always the void that is created, and trying to figure out, hopefully, that that the efforts that he is a part of have recreated his ability to influence the movement. And I think that's possible, because I remember meeting many of the RMT folks last summer when we were in Scotland, and a lot of them are very energized, and a lot of them have leftist and perspectives, and it's really encouraging to see that for the left within labor movements. As you said, you know, every labor movement has a left and a right, and that's, we want to get rid of the right as much as we can. But so, well, that's good to hear, and sad to hear. I'm sorry, but his life is good to hear, is what I meant to say. And let's keep it going forward is the best thing I think we can do. I don't want to speed us through this entirely, but I do have a call to get on 5 minutes to talk about the stuff we're doing in the States. No, but let's quickly jump through feedback, and then we will be back.
Help will come whenever it's needed. Cheer, my comrades, cheer.
This is really quick, really. Just not that anybody's written anything specific to us, but just that the only words that I've gotten were encouragement and thankfulness that we are back, and actually back. So thank you, those that are listening, and please, there'll be links in the show notes for the group, in the organizing network, and other links that we've talked about as well. So I hope you all enjoy it. Is there anything else you had to say, Walton?
No, sorry for being gone for so long. Thank you. If anyone out there is still listening, it's great to have you engaged, and we'll speak to you next time.
Cool. See you all later. Visit us at cyberunions.org. Follow us on Twitter and Identica at cyberunions, or on Reddit/r/cyberunions. You can also email us feedback or grievance at cyberunions.org. Thank you for listening.